Wait, hold on. Your mother was upset about you marrying?
Yes.
Why?
Don't ask me.
Tell me about this. That's peculiar.
You don't realize that?
No.
Well, they were there, and they'd driven out with Aunt Hazel and Uncle Hal. And when we married, Uncle Hal and Aunt Hazel took us down to the President Hotel in Kansas City for our wedding dinner. And we spent the night. The President subsequently closed it.
Who were these people?
Well, they were the best friends of Mother and Dad in Pineville.
Okay.
He was a coal mine owner. He was from England.
Okay.
Up in Harlan County.
Okay.
And he would go way up there.
What was his name?
And capital Mould.
Mould.
He was from England. He had a brogue still. He was a wonderful man.
And he lived in Harlan?
No, he just drove up there.
Okay.
He lived in Pineville.
Okay. Okay.
And they were such good friends. We called her Aunt Hazel and him Uncle Hal. And they stayed close friends all down through those years.
So what happened? So was your mother upset because your wedding was just kind of last minute, not formal? What was going on there?
Somebody told me how terrible she acted. I don't know. But as I've told you, she was a control person. And she could not control Emma Price one whit. And so she had to take it, and Dad was gone. She had to take it out on me. And I don't know who's the one that told me that Mother acted so terrible. I think it was because suddenly her two little chicks were gone, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we married. David had no place to live. I didn't have any place to live.
Mm-hmm.
When we married, on Thursday afternoon, on David's afternoon off, I went to the lab and worked in my white uniform, met David downtown. He had to work. Dr. Denny was away on a 6 weeks vacation. Thursday was his afternoon off. He worked. And I took the streetcar from the General Hospital down and met him. We went to the dime store for lunch and to a wonderful jewelry store and bought the wedding ring. And we had to get a license. You could get it right then. We went and got the license. This is the same afternoon. And we rode We drove back up close to where the apartment was. There was a florist shop and stopped and got a corsage for me to wear. I had this blue dress it was a princess dress with no belt and a coat that was and it was fairly new. I'd bought it in Middlesbrough, and I liked it. I didn't need a white dress. I got married in that pretty blue dress and subsequently threw it out at some point. Now I wish I had it. I'd like to see it, see what how thin I was then. Anyway, well, I didn't. I gave it away. And what other? Did we buy any other corsages? Like for Mother? I don't remember, but I remember my gardenia corsage. We stopped. There was a wonderful florist there on the way up to the apartment, and we went to a doctor, Reverend Treelys. Dr. Treelys had said to David, when he said he'd marry us on Thursday afternoon at 4:30, and don't be late. And David always looks so nice in white shoes. I love men in white shoes. And he said, if I clean those shoes, I'll be late to the wedding. And I said, well, I wish you'd wear them, but you better not be late. Anyway, he was put out because the preacher was late. And so his mother,
who lived here in Kansas City?
No, they lived in Emporia, Kansas.
Okay.
And his aunt and uncle, who had no children, David was like a son to them, came up. I wouldn't get married. He didn't want anybody. He just wanted to get married. And you know, men don't particularly care for those weddings, I don't think, clear on down the line. David certainly didn't. And we went to the, I can drive you, it'd be very easy to drive you to that beautiful church. And we were married there in that altar at St. Paul's Episcopal Church, a beautiful church. Mm-hmm. And well-attended church there on Main Street. And David had to admit a skin patient. Dermatologists don't like to put skin patients in the hospital because the nurses can see the stuff, and they're afraid they'll get something or other. all the stuff, heart and liver and all that stuff, they can't see. They don't complain about that. But he had a seriously ill patient, 105 in the shade, 14th of August. And after the ceremony, I went with David in his car to Research Hospital, which was on the way downtown to the dinner, and sat outside in the heat while he went in and admitted a patient, doctor's wife. And then we went on to this lovely wedding dinner that Aunt Hazel and Uncle Hal put on for us at the President Hotel.
And your mother was there, right?
Sure.
But so what happened when your mother acted so terribly?
And my sister and Frank had come back and stood up. She stood up. I stood up with her. Did anybody stand up with me, or was she back? They were only gone 5 days. And he got some asthma, and they kicked him out of the service, and he never had to serve.
So your sister got married, you got married 5 days later.
Mm-hmm.
Was your mother upset that you got married so close to your sister?
Don't ask me why mother was upset. I just look back at it. She really liked to tell me what to do and not to do, and I didn't like to argue with my parents.
You just pretty much did whatever they
Price,
told
you. Well, if I could. But Emma Price got her way. She really didn't treat us the same, and that's the truth. And she was crazy about Frank, and he was always wonderful to her, and that was good. And she lived with them, and they had a wonderful place for her, and they had those four boys, and she lived in their first house they lived in, and on the third story. It had a finished third story. It was nice. And then they bought the house you saw, and and they have glassed in that giant side porch. Mm-hmm. I wonder what kind of a room it is.
It's going to be lovely. So, do you remember your mother at the wedding? And your father was dead? Or your father was alive? Was he at your wedding?
He was here. Okay. He came out with Aunt Hazel and Uncle Hal.
So what was it that your mother did that was so terrible?
I don't know. I only heard she did. That's all anybody told me. Well, she was furious because I was getting married.
And it wasn't to who you were.
One time she did say something, well, you just don't know what it's like to have both your children gone, or something like that.
It was just too quick for her between the two marriages.
Well, I was close to 24 years old, which was the age she was, and David was going on 30. And a doctor, and a wonderful job. He earned $75 a month when we got married. That's what doctors got, and working for other doctors. And he upped it to 110. We got by fine. Moved, and we stayed in the President Hotel, and the next day, I put my uniform back on and went back to the lab, and I had stopped and told the pathologist who was head of the lab that David, now he knew David, he'd interned at that hospital and then gone to Philadelphia and specialized. And I thought, since he was my boss, I stopped in and said, Vic, Dr. Buehler, David and I are being married this afternoon. Well, there were two sisters who worked in the hematology lab and upstairs. And they all, at that time, the Kansas City Star put every marriage license in. And the two Henderson sisters read every marriage license early in the morning. And they stopped by Dr. Buehler's office, which was, as you went, a pathologist has to run a laboratory and check everything. Mm-hmm. And they stopped and said, Elsie and David got married yesterday. And he said, well, I know it. So that took this wind out of their sails. What about? But I wouldn't have done it without telling him, because it was important, and I told
him.
I went back to work, and he said, I had my white uniform on, and he said, go on home and find a place to live, because we didn't even have a place to live. And we went across the street, catacornered to the Bainbridge Hotel, which was in the paper, and I cut it out of the paper, a picture of it, which was right across, it was the Kansas City baseball team live there, the old Monarchs or whatever they were, and David just loved being where they were. No air conditioning, and that fan upstairs that's on that table was And we moved in one of those little apartments, hot and blazes, and Frank came up and Price and saw that it was hot, and we had beds that went clear up and went around into a place that they could, and it was a living room, and then we had to pull the bed down.
I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was hot. And the next day, Frank and Emma Price came in and brought us that fan for our wedding present. Wasn't that nice? And I don't think I ever told Aunt Grandmother anything of what to send.
You don't remember getting it.
And we sent invitations. I mean, announcements.
Oh, announcements, huh.
For both of the weddings.
Okay.
And it was in the Kansas City paper. And it was in the Emporia Gazette. And well, I don't know where else.
Well, you know, you'd mentioned kind of this spat with your mom when Aunt Catherine came. You know, just kind of a control issue. And was that common with some of the Cock women? I don't know
anything about the Cock women. And Sarah wasn't that kind of a person. I don't think Aunt Frances was.
I think they did have some issues like that, too. And I'm sure it just...
Well, I think Aunt Frances left home and went to Lexington. And she couldn't come back and run that house. Mm-hmm. Though she helped if she could. And she would... Helen told me just recently that when Grandfather Cock would need money so much, mm-hmm. she would... Mm-hmm. Aunt Frances would borrow the money and buy part of the land. And that's why Helen owned so much of it. Because Aunt Frances willed it to Perkin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I know that she used to, you know, bring money home on the weekends, and you know, during the
Depression. It was hard times.
Yeah.
And when the bugs come and the rains don't, it's rough on a farm. It's a hard life.
Yeah.
Now I do want you to cut off anything. If this isn't to go on this, this is about something else.
You're in life. You know, people let their guards down, and they tell you things that happened in their lives. And I know that
I've told you a lot of things.
When Frances, some good and some bad. When Frances, you know, we didn't even know about her divorce until she was 97. And any time when I would ask her about Mr. Perkins, she'd say, "Oh, it's too painful to talk about."
I didn't know she had a divorce.
And it was very, very, very painful for her.
Well, he had planned to be a priest. You know that. Catholic priest, Frank Kelly.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I didn't know
and
that.
You didn't?
No.
Well, I did.
Tell me about Frank Kelly.
He was always pleasant. I liked him.
That's what I always hear, he's a lovely man.
That Aunt Frances, she was something. She had personality plus, didn't she? I was crazy about my Aunt Frances. And it's, they were so different, she and Sarah and Rebecca.
How was Rebecca different than Sarah and Frances? What were just some of her differences? Or,
well, I have to look at that through the eyes of a child. I accepted them for what they were and with their reaction to me, and I was as cooperative with both of them as I possibly could be. Did we go to see Aunt Frances, David and I? I don't think so, but I was in her home some when I would go up there.
Well, when you were taking care of your mother, you know, later in life, did your mother ever open up and tell you things about her life that you were surprised to know about, or that made sense to you once she told you?
Well, plenty of things, but I can't just recall all of them now. And there's that tape up there that you said yours was cut into.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to get a copy of that.
I may have two copies up there.
Maybe we could take it somewhere and get a copy. What do you think? Have there been any mysteries or anything that has intrigued you about the Cock family your whole life? Is there something that's kind of...
You know, totally, total acceptance. I was up there. I was with them so much. And
do you remember when Perk and Helen got married?
Mm-hmm.
What was it like?
Well, I was down in Pineville. I wasn't ever up there then.
You remember hearing about it?
Sure.
Was it big news? Because Helen had told me that they kept it a secret for a long time, for a while, and nobody knew about it.
And she didn't live at the house then.
Yeah. Why is that?
Well, I don't know, but I could just surmise that they wanted to be man and wife. And
but she lived with her parents, and he still stayed at the home place, and no one knew that they had gotten married.
Well, I would say it probably was financial. They didn't have money to go someplace else and live, and Perk liked it out on the farm, and it was just convenience. I don't think there was any big deal. Helen, Perk told me about being in love with Helen.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We didn't have any secrets. I can remember riding that car on the way to Uncle Sid's burial place from the funeral home. And the subject of African Americans came up, and did I tell you this already?
Yes.
We don't want them. We don't need them. And I said, Burke, you're going to lose. They're good ball players. We don't want them. We don't need them. And one thing he said to me, Elsie, remember when we used to hear about the politicians meeting in people's barns so nobody knew what they were saying? He said, you know, I'm going to those barns now, to those secret meetings, political meetings. He told me that.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yes, it is. I thought it was. He told me that. Huh. He was so good to Uncle Sid.
See,
it was terrible that Uncle Sid changed his will. But then Helen, when they were both dead, Helen got it all. I mean, that day she went to the courthouse and got it, which she should have.
Speaking of wills, you know, it seems like there's been this tradition of wills changing last minute. You know, you talked about Uncle Sid's will. Aunt Sue's will was changed last minute. Jean, I don't think, had a will. And then Carolyn had this strange thing happen.
Like what?
Well, where she auctioned off everything in the house.
Well, that was before the will.
Yeah, yeah.
But, or the will had been made before then.
Yeah.
There was no excuse for what Carolyn did. I wish they could have stopped her. Well, her grandmother was a witch, and she just inherited some of her grandmother's characteristics. Carol Sled's mother. So she was in my house and down in Pineville. She came down with them once.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I knew her. Yeah. I do believe, now that you hear so much about children being abused, that those girls were abused.
By the grandmother and the father?
And maybe sexually by the father. But that would be because Jean hated men. She wanted nothing to do with a man. And she never had a date that I know about. And she was a beloved person. People just loved her. Mm-hmm. And
she was really dedicated to helping children.
Now, wasn't it Carolyn that never put Jean's death in the paper? So nobody knew that in Mount Sterling that she was dead?
I don't know. I hadn't heard that story. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got the place I sent where they, when they finally said something or other, and I sent that children's home money. It's in my card catalog. I don't remember what the alphabetical number, what the name of it was, but
I remember.
I sent money to them.
Huh. I remember being there once and doing family history and interviewing Aunt Sue and Jean, and I remember Jean getting a call, and it was like an emergency call where a child was being abused. And I remember, I was like, you know, maybe 13 or 14, and I just remember kind of observing how she handled it.
And Sarah's and Center to Midway High School through Midway, and then
Midway College.
Midway College.
She went to Transylvania.
And then Midway High School. Okay. Midway was a high school.
Okay, okay.
And then she went to Transylvania.
Okay.
And she got a degree in sociology, didn't she? And because that's where all the things for helping people who need help comes from, sociology people, Latin. Soci us, soci e, masculine. I knew a lot of Latin once. It stood me in good stead. Latin's a good thing to know.
Well,
Bo Perk wasn't going to learn it, or Shakespeare, or anything else. All he was interested in was farming.
Did that ever come between you all, the fact that you went to college and you still related to each other?
College isn't that big a thing. Anybody can go to college and work and learn. Depends on, do you want to learn?
Mm-hmm.
The kid that mowed my grass today said he has 1 whole month. And he can't wait to leave his family.
That.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Can't wait to leave it.
That'll be my son, too.
Doesn't want to. Oh, and he has those beautiful blue eyes. His brother's not as handsome as he is. And he's a small brat, the brother. But I'll be teaching him a few things in a nice way. He comes over here. Their basketball net, he's.
My father's name was Price Cook, C-A-L-K, and my mother's name was Emma Rice Crooks Cook.
What were your grandparents' names?
My father's father was named Thomas Cook, and my father's mother was named Mary Catherine Price Cook, and she died when he was a small child, and then my grandfather married again, the lady from whom I'm named, Rebecca Ashton, was her name.
Okay, and what countries in Europe did they come from?
Well, I'm not sure just exactly what country they came from, but I think my grandfather Price was Welsh. And my great-grandmother was English. And on the Crook side of the house, they came from England. The home over there that my mother's people was called Crookston Castle in England. And my great-grandmother's family were named Montague from England. And they have a coat of arms and all.
What time did they come over to America?
Well, it was many years before the Revolution. I don't know I don't remember the exact year that they came to America.
Did they settle? Did they go straight to Kentucky or?
Oh, no. They settled in Virginia, Maryland. My great-grandfather, John Lewis Price, was born in Maryland. And I don't have the record here so that I could tell you the day that he was born. But after the Revolution, they came to Kentucky and settled around Lexington in Jasmine County.
When did they finally come to the farm in Mount Sterling?
Well, my great-great-grandfather, William Cook, came in the early time, and he came over the Wilderness Road before Kentucky was really settled by the, he came ahead of the Prices, and came through, and he wrote a diary, which he kept. And along the way, part of the men were afraid of the Indians and went back. But he kept on. He came through from Virginia through Tennessee, over the Cumberland Gap, and down in Kentucky and settled in Boonesboro, Kentucky, which is east or southeast of Lexington.
Okay, and how long did your parents live? Did your parents always live in that house, or where they?
My grandfather, great, chose the place where the home is because of the spring which is there. Water was good water was something that they always had to find. And he came and settled there and built a brick house not far from that spring. And then one of his children, with winding stairway, and one of his children fell down the stairway and injured his hip. And then another one of the children died while that house, they were living in that house, so he tore it down and built the house, which is still there now on the same farm, in a different manner. I would say it was one of the first ranch type houses. It was a story and a half, and the stairways had doors to close them so the children couldn't go up the stairs. It was a front stairs and a back stairs, and you could not get from the back stairs to the front stairs without coming downstairs or crossing the roof from dormer windows, from one dormer window to the other, which we used to do as children if we didn't want our parents to know that we'd gone out from our rooms on the stairs. And my brothers step up the back stairs when we were growing up, and we slept up the front stairs. Although the house is spread out into a quite a livable way, there was the parlor, which was a great big room, 20 by 20, and then a big hall, and then another room across from that hall. And then back of that room was a long bay window dining room, with all one end that was out on the porch was all doors that could open. And in the front hall were huge double doors, back and front. And then back of that room, which we always call the dining room with the bay window, was another big room, even larger than the others, that was my mother's room. And then back of that room was the kitchen. And when I was a girl, you had to go out on the porch and around the storeroom to get to the kitchen. And through the closet, there was an opening where the servants would pass the food to keep it hot, through that opening to go into the dining room.
When did they change all the doors to the upstairs and stuff?
Well, it is not changed. It's there today, just like it was then. The only change is that the storeroom was taken down and a door was cut through the closet into the kitchen so that you would not have to go out and around the porch to the kitchen. And the kitchen was long and always had a huge fireplace in it. Also a stove to one side, which is just like it was in the old days. Even the slave table is there.
Isn't there just one set of stairs?
No, there are two sets of stairs. One goes up the back stairs and one goes the front stairs. The back stairs, a stairway went out of the big room next to the kitchen, which we always call Mother's Room, which my sister Sarah occupies now.
How many brothers and sisters did your parents have?
Well, they were 11 of us. I was the third child. My oldest sister's name was Mary Catherine Calk. She married A.J. McCarthy, and they lived in Montana because my aunt, my father's older sister, married a Canadian, and they settled in Bozeman, Montana, and that's why my sister was there. But my brother, was the second child, James Colt, and when he was about 20, he went to Montana to go to Montana State College, which was at Bozeman, Montana. That was before my sister went. Then I was the third child. Then my brother Thomas was next to me, and he went to Montana when he was old enough to go up to college. And he didn't come back to Kentucky to live, neither did James. Then next to Thomas came Sidney, who has always lived in Kentucky. The only time that he was ever out of Kentucky was when he was in World War I. And he left for World War I on February the 20th, 1918, and was overseas for several years. And after he came back, he lived right there around home. And next to Sidney came my sister Sarah. She lives at the old home now, but she married Charles Harmon, who was a retired sergeant major in the Marines. And next, in 4 years younger than Sarah, was Frances. Her name was Mary Frances, and she married C.M. Perkins and had one son, and he was taken in World War I and didn't come back for a long time. And then they were divorced, and she married Mr. Kelly, Frank Kelly. Then next to Frances was Willie B. Colt, the girl, named for Cousin Will Colt. And she married Vernon Fogg and had two children. And she died in a cesarean operation when they were very small, and he never married again and raised the girls. Then next to Willie B. came Robin, and she married Thomas Maddox, and they have three children, and she lives now in Dayton, Kentucky. And next to Robin was Ida, and Ida married Carol Sled. They lived in Lexington, Kentucky. And Ida died when Carolyn was 7 and Jean was a baby. And Jean lives now at the home with my sister Sarah. Carolyn lives in Washington, D.C. and has worked there at the Pentagon longer than any other person, and does the artwork for all everything that goes out for the government from that place. And then the youngest member of our family was Price Colt Jr. He married Catherine Board from Winchester, Kentucky. They had one son. And when that one son was 3 months old, he was killed in a road accident early in the morning. And he was 26 years old at that time, and he was the first member of our family to die.
When did, what were the age, like, how much older was Catherine and James, and how much older was James than all the other ones?
Well, my mother married on the 11th day of January, 1883. And that next December, my sister Catherine was born. And in a year and a half, in June, my brother James was born. And a year and a half, in December, I was born. And in 13 months, on the first day of February, my brother Thomas was born. And then in about 2 years, my brother Sidney was born. And then in about 2 years more, my sister Sarah was born. And then in 4 years, Francis came. And then 2 years, Willoughby came, and about two more, Robin, and then Ida, and then in 3 years, Price came. He was the youngest of all.
Now, from Price, what order did the ones that had died die? In what order did the ones that have died die? Like, after Price, who died?
Oh. Ida, the next youngest one, the mother of Jean and Carolyn, died with tetanus. She had been working in the garden, and that's the only way they could, and had cut her finger some way. And it came very suddenly. They never knew that she had it until it was too late. They could do nothing for her. And then Willoughby was the next one. To go, and she died in Lexington, Kentucky, in the hospital with that. The baby died too, both of them. And then Thomas died in Seattle, Washington, following an operation for gallstones. And since I'm talking about the family, and the years have gone by, and my sister Catherine had reached 88 years old, just about. She was chosen to be the outstanding woman in point of service in the state of Montana, and she was sent to Washington. In the senior citizens' convention they held there. And she had one daughter, Jerry, who lived in Phoenix, Arizona, and she met her in Lexington, Kentucky, and she went to the old home and spent Thanksgiving with my family there. Two sisters and a brother, and all were there, and the nieces and the nephews. And the governor of Kentucky made her a Kentucky colonel before they flew to Washington for the senior citizens' convention. While there, she was able to take it all in, went to the president's, and she has been a great Democratic worker in Montana. And Mike Mansfield, the senior senator, was one of her great friends, and she was dined around quite a bit with some relatives, and Carol, the niece who's in Washington, and she stayed the time out and flew back to Montana. She had to go to Billings, Montana by plane, change once before getting there, then go by train to her home in Glendive, Montana. And she called up that she was fine after she got there, which we thought was wonderful. Then she made a wonderful report of that trip to the people that sent her in Montana. And she decided that they did not choose a senior citizen because there were so many that had done so much. But she said she wished they had chosen a colored woman who was there in a wheelchair and who was 90 years old, the 13th child of a slave from Jacksonville, Florida, who had done wonderful work in that town.
Have you told us the history of the house? Grand, can you tell us about the old parlor in your house and the piano that's in that parlor?
My grandmother, I'll talk about the piano first. My step-grandmother, I'd say, was Rebecca Ashton. And she was very musical and was reared in Lexington, Kentucky, and sang and played for us all of her life. In fact, she played and sang for us the night that she died. And one of them was The Last Rose of Summer. The piano is rosewood, I believe, and is all across the front is inlaid with pearls. And I wouldn't know for sure exactly how old it was, but my grandfather, well, I guess it's over 100 years old now, because my grandfather married her after his first wife died. And I haven't looked into the exact date of that time, but I'm sure the piano is over 100 years old now. And it isn't too badly out of tune if they would work with it. I mean, if a tuner would tune it, it would be because it was a very expensive and beautiful piano.
Let me ask you another question. I've been told that at one time the Cox owned about 8,000 acres of land. Can you tell us maybe anything about, was it a plantation way back then? And what happened to the land?
Well, in those days it was called a plantation or a farm. When I was a child, the slave houses were being torn down because after the Civil War they didn't have slaves anymore. Some of them lived on the farm, but most of the slave houses were torn down. My grandfather gave a great deal of that land away. The old Springfield Church is on the land which he gave away. And then he had a brother which got some of the land. And then he gave the right of way through there to the C&O Railroad. And sold off, I don't remember, I was never told about how he sold off the land to different people that lived around in that area. And some of it was inherited by the children, the sisters and the brothers that married other people. And they inherited part of the land. But my grandfather, Thomas Cole, held on to his part of the land, and it has never been out of the family. It was a grant of land from the governor of Virginia, one of the first ones. Now, my great-great-grandfather was a surveyor, and he surveyed all the land around there and in Boonesboro, and he had a man that worked with him, and that man, when he sent in all of the surveying notices, he signed his name to it instead of my grandfather's. And my grandfather didn't care. It didn't matter to him. But in the old home in Kentucky is still the surveyors, all the surveyors' instruments, the compass and the chains and the stakes and everything that he used in the surveying. And there are many pictures of them. They are there in the wide front hall, along with many other antiques which were collected and gathered through the years and belonged to the family. It would take me a long time to describe all of those things. Many arrows that were found on the place, because right out from the home where we lived was one of the battles that they had with the Indians. And the stream that runs through the farm in front of the house was called Hinkston. And my grandmother named the old place Hinkston Dale. And it still goes through there just the same. And it's fed by another spring that was up on the other side of the plantation, and the spring which was there in the yard, which still is running and never has been dry, even in droughts of all kinds.
Let me ask you another question. Can you tell me the purpose when the house was built of putting the kitchen and then the master bedroom and then the dining room? What was the reasoning behind that?
Well, I told a while ago a little bit about the lay of the house. The servants were always kept separately from the rest of the house. And that's the reason that to be able to go into the kitchen from the rest of the house, you had to go out on a long L-shaped porch. This porch started over by the what we call the parlor. It was wide. And the parlor had two windows. And then it came on back to the front hall and into that dining room opening, which was all doors. And then on down past the big bedroom, which was my mother's. And at the time that I was growing up, there was a storeroom that was just outside the kitchen door where all the things were kept and locked up. And in my youth, flour and sugar and things were bought by the barrel and put in this storeroom. And pickles and jams and all were made and put in great big jars and were locked up in that storeroom. And the kitchen was... The fireplace was there, and the big old, was always a fire there. And the andirons and the big kettles and the things used in that day are still there after all these years.
Can you tell us a little bit about your education and that of your brothers and sisters?
Well, our education was a little bit different from most people's. We lived way out. We had no neighbors. The county school would have been way away from many miles in another direction from our home. We lived at that time, before the road was changed, about 3 miles out of Mount Sterling. In Mount Sterling was an Episcopal church, which my grandmother belonged to and adored and loved. And an Episcopal minister from Virginia came and established a school there called Evelsry Seminary. And we were sent to that school. I went to kindergarten just there before that school, just before that school started by a woman, a lady who held a kindergarten. And then just as soon as the school opened up, all of us who were old enough went to that Episcopal school. And Catherine graduated, my older sister, from that school. The teachers were all brought from Virginia, from Randolph-Macon College. And one of my first teachers for English was Miss Meta Glass, who was sister of the Senator Glass and who was president of Sweetbriar College. I remember her well, and she was really a very interesting, highbrow teacher, at least we thought she was. And one of those ladies that came from Virginia married one of the Mr. Ben Turner, one of the men in our town. And all of us went there until James went to, I can't remember the year that Mr. Abbott was his name, the minister, became ill and the school was closed. Because when I was 16 years old, I was sick, and the doctor wouldn't let me, or he thought I was sick anyhow. let me start going to school again. So my aunt and uncle from Pineville, Kentucky, Ms. F.A. Heath, my mother's sister, took me for that winter to their home in Pineville, Kentucky, where I studied piano and bookkeeping and I don't know, several different things. And then in later on, another school was opened up in Mount Sterling called Mount Sterling Collegiate Institute. And I went there taking a course which you could, at that time, you could take a state examination and be able to teach. And I was taking that special course. And the head of that school, while he was talking to us on Arbor Day, all of the rooms and the children were in the auditorium. When he walked up and was going to talk to us on Arbor Day, and he only said a few words, and then he said, "I'm suddenly ill," and he fell forward and died with a heart attack. And the school was closed.